art just doesn't, it doesn't just have to be like comics or pictures or whatever. You can do things with them.
The characters in my comics have to feel real, have to feel like people you would know and meet in real life, you know?
If you can create positivity, why wouldn't you?
You just make art because you love it. And if you can enjoy it for exactly what it is, then you'll never get tired of it.
You're listening to Curves and Conversation, a podcast where I interview artists and creatives in not safe for communities about who they are and what they do. I'm your host, Emmy, like the letters M-E, and today we're speaking to Lashani. Hello, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Emmy.
Not a problem. Wow, I think that's the first time I've ever heard my name. I gotta go back and listen to some of these and see if anybody else ever does that. It's always usually M. So I want to start with an introduction. Who are you?
Well, I'm Lashani, Lud Lashani on Twitter. And I sort of, I don't know how to categorize myself. I just love doing adult content. I love making, I love drawing. I draw comics. I experiment with visual novels. So I guess I'm sort of just a, you know, weird fetish content creator.
A weird fetish content creator, aren't we all? How did you get started? Usually someone has a story of like when they realized that they wanted to start drawing and sort of found their way into the community. So I guess I want to go there. When was that for you?
Well, I'm one of those people that have always been drawing. I've always just been scribbling with crayons or pencil crayons or anything like that. And so as you discover the not safe for work community, it's not hard to start becoming curious about what you can make with the skills that you just do for fun, you know?
Yes, I do.
And so I started, you know, like, gosh, I think it's been like 10, 11, 12 years ago now.
Whew.
Granted, most of that was in my own notebooks.
Yeah. didn't start posting publicly for a while. I'm pretty sure, though, like back in the days when I started lurking on DA and stuff, I saw your work a lot.
Mm-hmm. I definitely built up a lot of my momentum on DeviantArt. It's got my still got my largest following, even though that site's become a little bit of a hell site.
Yeah, look, tiny bit, just a tiny bit, Dad. yeah, I saw a lot of DA and FA work. So did you ever like have a Tumblr, or was it just DAFA Twitter?
I was on Tumblr until the Great Purge, and then
yeah.
So much stuff was going on, I just decided to deactivate the account, you know?
Oh, okay. So that makes sense. Yeah, it's better to sort of leave on your own accord rather than get kicked off.
Mm-hmm.
So, as usual, everybody I speak to is in sort of in not safe for work communities. What is your main thing? So, mine is, you know, usually expansion type things. I have a huge variety of kinks that are spread between three Twitter accounts. But when it comes to, like, cultivating an audience, where'd you start?
I'd say I started in the pregnancy community.
Oh, wow. I'm shocked. I had no idea.
I'd say that's definitely where I got my start, you know? It's like, when I first joined the community, I was still very, like, you know, like most people who join the internet communities, you start out pretty vanilla, you know?
Yes.
And so, back in the day, I found pregnancy to be the thing that I was most curious about, and one thing led to another. But, as I'm sure a lot of people have pointed out, the fetish communities online are kind of like, I would compare it to, like, a vortex, you know? You go around in your own little ring, but it's very easier to get deeper and deeper into more rapidly spinning specific places.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know how I ended up where I am, but it's, I understand. But I'm shocked. Why was it pregnancy art first? What pulled you into that allure?
It's kind of hard to, it's not that hard to explain, really. I guess it's just that when I was growing up, I'm one of the younger members of my generation, right?
Yes.
So pregnancy wasn't weird for me. all my relatives, you know, my cousins and siblings and stuff like that, they were starting to have children and I was still pretty young. So it was just normal to me, you know? So then when I got onto the online community, I wasn't weirded out by seeing, you know, pregnancy porn and kink stuff. It just wasn't strange to me, you know?
Wow.
So I just started following a couple artists back then who honestly I can't remember anymore if they were safe for work or not. Like, there's this one artist I used to really be interested in because I think it was a she, but she drew, you know, color pencil drawings of various characters pregnant, you know? They were all, as far as I remember, safe for work, but again, memories and DeviantArt, they don't really mix.
Yeah, they sure don't. You will go back through, like, your old favorites and be like, oh man, I don't know how I saved this. Mm-hmm. It's kind of wild.
And so, yeah, I would read, you know, pregnancy fan fiction and stuff like that. You know, the stuff that you could call romance, you know?
Ah, okay.
Just romance and fluff and lemon that gradually got spicier and stuff like that.
Oh, so you're like in the romantic. So, okay, these are starting to connect. So, you know, then, you can't have a pregnancy kink without romance, right?
Yeah, to start with, yeah. And then from there, it sort of gradually shifted to more just a general focus on large bellies, you know? Suddenly you're running into people who draw inflation, who draw weight gain, right?
Right, it makes sense.
And then more, and then, you know, eventually it becomes more the body type that you're fixating on rather than the original thing that brought you there.
Oh, I see. So eventually it just sort of becomes, you're kind of into the general shape and rather... not really how they got there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, and now that I think about it, a lot of fetishes can kind of go like that. I'm sorry. Go on.
Yeah, and then from there, it was similar stepping blocks to get to other things, you know? Gradually, you start being more comfortable with, you know, the classic is catgirls.
Yeah, right.
And then, you know, that expands to other monster girls and guys, and then next thing you know, you're occasionally checking out, you know, transformations into them. Then, you know, that's how people get sucked into the furry community.
Yeah, I I guess it is. I haven't done that yet. I'm still safe.
I don't consider myself a furry. I consider myself furry adjacent. But then I draw myself as a fucking elk all the time, so.
Yeah, see, that's okay. That's a fursona. There's no denying it at this point. You're in there. So now... pretty much you're sort of like an all kink kind of artist. I don't think, because I follow you on Twitter, and I followed you before that. I just didn't talk to you, but I followed you for a long time, and as the years have gone by, the variety of art you've drawn has just expanded, you know, grown and increased to develop or envelop a large variety of kinks. Now at this point, though, to be honest, I would think that you're more like a as Sponson said, horror artist. You draw a lot of everything. You draw like monsters, and you draw like still inflation stuff, and you draw like horror stuff. So where did that part come from?
Excuse me for a moment.
Oh, you're
okay.
Fine.
So I think that sort of descends just. Okay, I actually have a kind of funny story about this.
I'm ready.
So, I feel like it would not surprise anyone to know I was a very edgy teen. You know? I don't think it surprises anyone to hear that I was, you know, watching gory movies when I was too young to be. I had a very sick sense of humor, you know, that kind of thing. And so, what actually ended up happening is, like, I sort of was curious about that aspect of the internet as well. I was curious about other arrow horror creators. I was curious about, you know, horror fiction and horror artists and stuff like that. But I was currently in a long-term relationship that was very positive, you know? Was very focused on positive vibes. And so, as a result, there wasn't any room to explore horror stuff, right? It's like, you want to share something with somebody, but if they're not going to appreciate it, or if they're even going to be repulsed by it, you don't do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so after I separated and went on my own, I started to really explore what those kinds of feelings were for me. I wanted to understand why I had them, right? if I was just an edgelord looking to shock people, or if I just had a genuine fascination with horror concepts and the catharsis of dark storytelling, you know? And I think that's where I ended up. I think I just really like artwork and fetish work that makes you feel something on top of being horny.
Scaroused?
Yeah.
I see. I understand. It's sort of like, and you make a good point there. If you know that who you're speaking to doesn't like really share like your kinks or the kind of artwork that you want to make, you don't want to share it with them because then they're going to feel bad and then you're going to feel bad. And it's just sort of rough. Knowing that though, how did your audience like react to kind of your transition? If you started off as like a preg kink artist and then you started moving on to all of these different types of kinks and art styles and the horror stuff, I mean, did your audience even react? Did anybody ever comment on it, or did they just kind of adapt and follow?
I had to get used to seeing, I like your old stuff pretty much every week. You know? It was especially prominent, as you said, during the immediate transition when start moving away from expansion and pregnancy and stuff like that. It was definitely most prominent back then. But because, like, you know, we're talking about the era horror stuff, but we kind of skipped the middling in between where I was really diving into transformation stuff. I had a couple years where I would just draw literally anything people brought to me. You
okay,
know?
Right.
And as such, thankfully, by the time I got to era horror, people had kind of gotten used to me drawing basically whatever I felt like. So it was less that I went from pregnancy to drawing, you know, horror and gore stuff. Gore and horror stuff. And it was more that I just kept going to more extremes in a gradual pace for my audience. That said, I still get people commenting that they like my old stuff from, like, God, like 4 years ago now.
Yeah, it's, man, yeah, 4 years. It's, I feel like it's even been longer than that. But, I mean, if they're still following you, I mean, they have to like some of the modern stuff at this point, right? I mean, you don't just keep following somebody if you, what is it, a hope that you're going to just relapse or...
Yeah, I guess. It's like, I'd say that it's pretty much normal for most of my audience now. Like, you know, they still have their preferences, but they've also learned that, you know, they don't bug me about it all the time.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, do you talk to your audience a lot, sort of interact with them on a regular basis? I know it's kind of tough. It seems like, at least on platforms like Twitter, and I'm bad about this, I apologize to anybody that hears me speaking on this, but it's like you get so many notifications just so often that it's really hard to kind of respond to people. Do you have a way to that you manage that, or do you just sort of see the comments, take a look at them, and then mentally decide, you know, how you'll react with the next picture?
I am absolutely terrible about that. So I got into the horrible habit of not really checking my comments and messages until after they've accumulated.
Oh, you don't even look at them until there's like a punch.
Sometimes I skim them when they come in, especially on Twitter, because if I don't check on Twitter, they'll be buried forever, you know?
Yes.
But on other websites that thankfully separate comments from all the other interactions, I generally don't, you know, look at them in depth until I put aside a day to do it. I'm terrible like that.
Oh, wow.
And as a result, I am one of those people that will respond to, you know, a 3-month-old comment.
Wow. Because you just saw it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's probably good for your mental health, though.
I'd say maybe, you know, I try not to be extremely reliant on what people think of me and my artwork to have my motivation to create, you know?
Yeah, how do you do that?
Well, I guess going back to what I said earlier is that I've always loved to create, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I've always loved to just make something that I want to see exist in the world. Whether that's, you know, 100 original Pokemon or, you know, a big expensive bloody skeleton painting or, you know, a pornography about body inflating shamans.
Yeah, that comic's good, by the way.
Oh, thank you. If I want to see something exist, I can just sort of make it, you know? And it's part of how I enjoy my time. It's what I would do even if I wasn't getting paid for it. I mean, I still have the bad habit of making content completely for free, therefore cutting into the time I spend on paid content. But you know how it is.
Yes, I do. when it comes to, like, monetizing things, though, when did you start getting into, like, taking commissions? And I don't know, I guess this is a good place to ask. Like, I don't know if you have, like, a Subscribestar or Patreon or anything.
I do have a Patreon, which is currently in that sort of vague zone between a tip jar and a sponsorship, you know, plan. Mm-hmm. Basically, I use my Patreon to fund the development of visual novels, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you know, people who donate will get access to the, you know, artwork and work in progress, writing stuff that I'm working on for the next visual novel I'm working on.
Oh, okay, okay.
And, you know, I think I'll also probably give them the completed visual novel for free, though I might charge for people to play it on Itch.io.
Yeah, right? that makes sense. So, visual novels, I didn't know you made games. Have you made visual novels before, or is the one you're working on Patreon, like, your first one?
I guess it depends on how much you define visual novel.
Okay.
Because I have completed 4, I think.
Oh, okay. So you've made 4 games.
But they're the kinds that you sit down and finish in like 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, they're very small, very experimental. Me just playing with the engine in Python, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one of them is, I wouldn't even call a visual novel. I just call it, you know, a digital comic.
Okay.
You know, I just made the sprites and the characters interacting and, you know, you just read through the story like that.
Okay, so this one right now is, like, bigger than all of those, and, like, scope is what you're saying.
Yeah, the one I'm currently working on is what I would consider my first actual visual novel dating sim. You know, I've taken the time to figure out how to code in, you know, a time limit, so how many days your character has to do stuff, and a money system, an inventory system. I'm actually making this one a solid game rather than just a small for fun project, you know?
Oh, yeah, it is a game. And you're doing it by yourself?
Yep.
Oh. I mean,
because I am a stubborn bitch.
Okay.
Basically, because it's like, I was basically like, I'm an artist, right? Mm-hmm. I don't consider myself the best writer, though I have people constantly tell me I'm better than I think I am. And I'm also, because I'm a self-employed artist with such a scatterbrain, I don't have the funds to hire people to do stuff for me. You know, I don't have the money to commission someone to do my programming for me.
Oh.
So instead of that, I was like, I'll just learn how to do it myself.
Wow, though, it's good to have that kind of like self-motivation, but that's got to be like a lot of work.
Oh, definitely. That's why I have to make it into a Patreon and say that as it stands, it's currently just a tip jar, you know, because it's like, even the ones that I've worked on so far, they can still take me, you know, a couple weeks to finish them. And as they've said, there have been personal projects. And it's like, you can't just devote that kind of time just for something for fun or mm-hmm. as a risk investment without having some form of way of supporting it, you know?
Right. It's good to have kind of like a, as you said, a tip jar or some sort of financial incentive that will help you keep working on it. There are a lot of things, projects that I like or projects that I'm working on also, that the money sort of helps you keep yourself in a good mental state, because you don't want to spend 11 hours doing something and it's like, wow, nothing came of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's pain. I mean, it's still nice to, you know, sort of give stuff away. There's definitely a lot of free entertainment on the internet, free from you, free from everybody I've spoken to. But you still want to be able to have something, you know, that you can sort of sell. You know, the work costs something.
Mm-hmm.
You deserve to be you know, paid for it.
Got bills to pay.
Definitely, we all do. Do you plan, though, because I know that you're sort of working at it at your own pace, really using it as a tip jar. Do you think that you'll finish it? Which is a broad question, but I'm asking because it's big, and you're doing it alone.
I really, really want to. I try to be brutally realistic with myself, you know? So, like, for example, I actually didn't tell people I was working on it until I had a working mechanics test.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
So, I didn't post it on my Patreon that I was working on it until I had the mechanics test that tested, you know, the day cycle, the money cycle, the inventory cycle, the romance options, the branching paths and stuff like that. And so I've also severely cut down all the brainstorming content.
Okay.
Because it's going to be a fetish game. I call it Size Queens.
That's pretty good.
Basically, when you're sitting down to brainstorm, you can come up with all sorts of characters to fit every specific niche of something, right?
Absolutely.
So it's like, you know, your capacity to brainstorm characters is much larger than the capacity to actually hone in and finish something. So I had brainstorms and sketches and, you know, character bios for like more than a dozen potential characters to use. But, you know, could I realistically have done that? No.
And not by yourself.
Not by myself, no. So instead, I've been trying to cut it back down, and I've currently cut it down to 5 characters, one of which was designed by one of my longtime financial supporters as thanks.
Oh, that's sick. Yeah, very cool.
So now I have, you know, 5 characters. I've capped the gameplay at 12 days, you know, representing 12 weeks. And, you know, I'm trying to just very focus on making something that I could, in theory, finish. I'm trying to keep the amount of locations in the game, the amount of sprites down, and I'm trying to make something that I could realistically finish. I don't know if I can, but that's just because I, you know, try not to get my own hopes up too high.
Well, I don't even really think it's about getting your hopes up too high. I know what you're saying, definitely. I understand and relate, but it is about kind of avoiding the trap of feature creep and constantly wanting to add things. I run into this even when it comes to like simple stuff like OCs. You know, you you see something, you're like, that's great, I don't have any characters that fit that, and you gotta make a new one, and it just keeps happening over and over and over again. Keeping yourself mentally grounded when you're working on something, I think it's like the hardest part, honestly.
So with my brainstorming, I've been trying to go, okay, 5 characters, 3 or 4 big scenes each, and, you know, like that. It's like just trying to keep myself grounded around that orbit as I try to get more and more work done. Not trying to save the urge to add in more stuff until I've got my solid core, my tree trunk.
Yeah, it's a good way to brainstorm, really, because, you know, when you have those goals that you can track, you know when you're done with a thing, you know? If it's just like, I want to do a game, well, when does it end? When does it start? How do you know that you're making progress? It's...
Yeah.
A lot of people sort of run into that.
And of course, you know, if my Patreon suddenly exploded and I had enough money to pay my bills from that alone, I probably would go a little bit more nuts with adding in the other characters I brainstormed. But again, you know, as we talked about, that's where the finances come in and the time and all that stuff.
Well, now I'm curious. So if you said if your Patreon exploded, what is define exploded?
I'd say enough that I could reliably pay my bills with just Patreon. I'd be willing to take commissions to buy myself food, but my bills would be paid with Patreon.
Okay, so like Patreon's like the main source of income, and then commissions are just like extra stuff.
That would be, in my opinion, exploded. Which, with the current way that I live my own life, would be like $800-$900, maybe.
Oh man, $900.
I'm currently living on reserve as the caretaker.
Okay, I was gonna say that is low maintenance.
Yeah, you know, I'm living on reservation, so, you know, we don't pay house taxes. I'm taking care of my you know, ill mother and my occasionally ill brother. So, you know, I'm not responsible for as many things as if I was living on my own.
That actually sounds like a ton of responsibility. I definitely wish you luck in those endeavors. That's a lot. That's a lot. I think that's more responsibility than I have. I just got to pay for things and you know, take care of a dog sometimes.
I'd like to eventually be able to just pay for things.
Yeah, I it would be nice. So, do you are you adverse to doing? And I know it's like taboo, but like Patreon exclusive stuff. Because in a lot of cases, I know a lot of people don't like that. And when I say a lot of people, I mean like people that don't pay for things in general. But the thing is that there are always going to be people that do want to see the exclusive stuff if you make it. I mean, Patreon does well for a reason. As much as people like to complain, a lot of people are doing just fine. But you need to make something to draw people in that case. So I guess what I'm really trying to say is, would you ever want to just make stuff that like maybe goes on Patreon a month early and then, you know, everybody else sees it later? Or is that just not really your bag?
I've considered it. It's, I feel like it would potentially be really good for, you know, my ability to be independent and make what I want to make. I guess I just haven't committed to making that transition, you know?
Okay, so it's like something that you would want to do, but...
It's a part of me, myself, I call relentlessly Canadian. You know, and it's like, when you can admit that something seems like it would be the best financial decision or the best, you know, for your own comfort decision, but you hesitate to do it because it could come across as rude.
Yes.
And at the same time, you know, it's like, I guess anything I post to Patreon, except for, you know, finished products, like, you know, the finished visual novel or a finished comic page, you know, comic collection or whatever.
Right.
I would want to release publicly, you know. If I was to start posting my artwork to Patreon first before posting it publicly, you know, I feel like I could do that. Maybe. But I'm also just a bit of a scatterbrain, so... I've been forgetting to post to even just DA and FA for a long time right now, so I'm being terrible like that.
No, I mean, I understand. I literally cannot remember the last time I posted something on DeviantArt.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. But I get what you're saying, definitely. You know, it's the hard part is making something and then knowing that the maximum amount of people aren't going to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's whenever I get any art or a commission or, you know, make a video, it's like I want the most amount of people to be able to see the work and put it out there for everyone. So I guess Patreon's kind of like counterproductive to that. But at the same time, it's a good incentive for people who want to support you to, you know, be able to say why they're doing it and for you to be able to have something to offer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, this making money with art is tricky, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Ugh. You gotta really think that, you know, you're the hottest shit in the room.
Yeah, absolutely. If not, yeah. It's like they can tell when you're afraid.
Like, you see people who sell commissions, you know, like full pieces for like $5 or even DA points. It's like, what are you doing? You're really underselling yourself. It's like, oh no.
Yeah, I've spoken to a few people who that's actually where they started DA points. I think Lemon was like doing $2 commissions. So it's we all have some place that we start before we kind of understand our worth. So we're approaching sort of the end of our time together. It's been about 30 minutes, like 31 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to do is get like final thoughts. If you have any piece of advice for someone that's, you know, has their own Patreon. Maybe they're making their own visual novel. Yeah, or maybe they're even just getting started, like how you got started. A piece of motivation that you wish somebody would have given to you in your humble beginnings.
I'd say that the piece of motivation I would give to anybody who's out there is to not be afraid to make what you want to make. Don't be afraid to define yourself by what you want to be. So many people enter into the art community or the fetish community or any online community and let themselves be put into a box. Right. They let themselves be defined by what they do first. And whether that's fan art or a single fetish or a single character in some cases, it's like, if you want to be that, more power to you. But a story I see disappointingly often are people who want to be different who are afraid to because they might destroy their audience. So my advice is to, at the earliest you can, try to be yourself.
That is fantastic advice. I love it.
Yeah. You know how you just pointed out I'm an Arrow horror artist, right? You know how many people have come to me pointing out they wish they could do more Arrow horror, but just can't commit to it because their audience expects them to do cute or sexy stuff all the time? It's been like, you know, it's been, I think, more than 10 people now.
Yeah, that's a trend for sure.
It's like, but I can't do this. All I do is draw really cute femboy foxes. And it's like, of course you can do it. You've just got to commit to it. You've got to, you know, help your audience transition. It's like, aw.
Yeah, you got to push them in a direction that you want them to go in so that you can also be going in that same direction. You guys can get there together.
Mm-hmm.
And next, thanks for that. Anything that you want to plug, this is Twitter, DeviantArt, Fur Affinity, your Patreon, your game. So all of your links, go.
I am Lashani on DeviantArt and Fur Affinity and Patreon. Just Lashani, LUSHAANI. And then on Twitter, I am Lewd Lashani.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that until today. I thought it was Lashani everywhere. But now we know. I want to go ahead and definitely thank you for taking the time out to speak to me today. I know it's kind of early where you are because you're 3 hours behind me. So thanks for getting up and, you know, joining me for a Courage and Conversation episode. I'm not sure what episode this is. The last time that I said that out loud, I was an episode off, and I had to edit it, and it was really embarrassing. So we're just going to wait until I post it, and I'll have the episode number there. To everybody who's listening, thank you again for joining me with this conversation with Lush. You were listening to Courage and Conversation. And I want you to enjoy the rest of your day. See you next time.
So long.